The following broadcast has been approved for Elite Hornets fans.
What a block by Cody Zeller.
Walker down the lane. Drive, shoots, scores! Game over!
Bringing back the buzz was only the beginning.
We will not go quietly into the night.
It's Hornets talk for the hardcore fan. It's Hive Talk Live.
Welcome in, Hornets fans. You are listening to Hive Talk Live Thursdays, brought to you by ESPN 730, right here on atthehive.com. It's Hornets talk for the hardcore fan, and we are live in the Gittimer.com studios in BEA, beautiful uptown Charlotte. I'm Doug Branson, joined by Justin Thomas. He covers the Charlotte Hornets for ESPN 730. Justin, welcome back.
You know, I'm not too happy that you're like really upbeat and positive. I was really coming in here ready to bring the hammer.
I am even keel. I would fit right in, I think, with this Hornets
That's
roster
no fun.
And coaching staff. I am very hard to knock off. I'm very even keel. I keep a cool head about things. I'm calm. We have a great show coming up. We've got Justin Verrier from ESPN.com. He's been covering this series from the Hornets angle. He'll be here at 6:15. And then a show favorite, Adi Joseph, deputy editor at Sporting News, will be on later around 6:35, 6:40. We'll talk to him about this Nick Batum news and about this conversation that's going around about Steve Clifford's press conference. Steve Clifford had some very interesting things to say about all of these adjustments. And that's what the show's title tonight is called, hashtag adjustments. That some of these reporters have been asking him about. He did it. He was very respectful.
As always.
Right. He's always very genuine, very respectful. But it was very interesting. We've got the clip. We'll play the clip, and we'll ask Adi Joseph, who's been around the Hornets all season, so he definitely knows what Clifford's all about. Hey, you can listen to us live every Tuesday and Thursday. We're getting close to the end of this season, but we've got several shows left, including something that I'm very excited about. It will happen eventually. I don't know when, because we have to wait for these playoffs to play out, but our season recap show is coming up. Both Justin and David will be involved in that, and we'll relive some of the memories from this season. It's going to be a great time. But again, Tuesdays, Thursdays, right here, 6 o'clock p.m., HiveTalkLive.com. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast aggregator to get shows uploaded to your mobile device of choice. And with that, we say, let's swarm Charlotte. Before we recap Game 2 or look ahead to Game 3 in Charlotte, we have to update you on some news. Nick Batum injury news. Of course, he injured his left ankle, that same ankle that he injured almost 2 weeks ago against Boston. He re-injured it in Game 2, turned that left ankle. Chris Haynes on Twitter from Cleveland.com, he's an NBA insider for Cleveland.com, reporting that Nick Batum is expected to miss the rest of the first round against the Heat. League sources telling Cleveland.com, Nick Batum expected to miss the rest of the first round. Also in this report, the x-rays revealed no fracture. So, Justin, no fracture. That means long-term could be good. You don't want to see a fracture, because that's going to be a long road to recovery, but a second straight sprain. I mean, that's a little bit concerning, I think.
I wouldn't press the panic button. Just a lingering injury that occurred late in the season, and it just came at probably the worst time it could happen, which has sidelined him for the season and possibly Charlotte's hopes of trying to win this series. But you know, it's just bad timing. The previous time we were in the playoffs, the Bobcats, Big Al, he gets hurt, and it's like, I've always wondered, does the injury bug have a personal beef with the Charlotte franchise? Because just when things are looking good and Charlotte gets some hope and people are getting behind the team, the injury bug strikes, and it has no specific victim. It goes out there, anybody.
Yeah, Al Jefferson with the plantar fasciitis injury to his foot, that kept him out of that Miami series. And then if you go back, I believe Steven Jackson was ailing in that first round sweep that the Bobcats took to the Orlando Magic.
I never heard that one before.
That was the nickname. That was Stack Jack. Stack Jack.
That's not bad. I like
Captain Jack. People said
okay,
that as
I have
well.
Heard
you
Captain
heard that
Jack.
One, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Stack Jack as well. I think was a that's my. I like that one better.
More
I'm not into Navy nicknames. But let's get back to this Batum injury. The question, obviously, who replaces him in the lineup? But, Justin, I see a couple of options here. You can, and these are things that the Hornets have done this season because Batum has missed several games with toe injuries and ankle injuries. You can either start Lynn, you can start Frank and move Courtney Lee to the two and Marvin to the three, or you could even go deeper and play somebody like Lamb, although I think that would probably be the long shot odds in this because Lamb hasn't played at all in this series, so that would be a stretch to bring somebody who hasn't been in the rotation at all and immediately elevate them to the level of starter. Where do you see this going?
I think you start Lynn. To be honest, I would take that shot, you know, either Lamb or Troy Daniels, because from what I've seen in two games, Frank Kaminsky, he's not prepared for this type of basketball right now. You could say the same thing about Troy Daniels and Jeremy Lamb, but at least those guys can shoot. Now, the issue with those guys have been defense. And even with Lynn, you start Lynn, Dwayne Wade has been taking his lunch. Like, there's...
Yeah, the issue with starting Lynn alongside Kemba Walker is that you really give up a lot of size because Miami, they bring size on the wing positions with not only... Goran Dragic and Kemba, that's a pretty even matchup. But with Wade, with Justice Winslow, and then Josh Richardson is a tall, strong guard who can play both guard positions. So all of those mismatches in terms of size. And then, as you said, Frank Kaminsky, only one shot attempt, is struggling to recover on Ding or Justice Winslow when they go super small. He's just struggling to close out. And, I thought he did a little better job on defense. He knew a little bit where he was supposed to be, but again, he's just struggling to close out. He's just not strong enough to bang down low for good rebounding opportunities. That one shot attempt that he had, he was matched up against Winslow, got the ball over the top, trying to use that size advantage over Winslow, but then Stoudemire immediately helped over, and he couldn't fight through Stoudemire to finish and didn't pass out. You know, it can't be that easy to stop his offense. Mm-mm. You know, if you look to play him further. And look, I respect Steve Clifford for saying that Frank is out there and he's providing space, but if I took a look at the tape, and Winslow and Ding are not giving him that respect on the three-point line in the catch-and-shoot opportunities. They're giving that up, and they're able to cheat down because, you know, I looked at the Hornets in that game, and I think they're not – I don't think they fully trust passing the ball to Frank right now.
They don't. When Frank gets the ball, you can tell he doesn't even want it. When the ball gets in his hands, he's like – okay, I got to get it out. Hot potato. It's completely different basketball. He stayed in college for 4 years and played at a high level.
Well, in the regular season, we haven't seen this in the regular season. He's played confidently at different points in the regular season.
Playoff basketball is a different animal. It's a different beast. Because there were times you watch him, like after you watch Frank this entire year, you say, you know, I'm comfortable with Frank in the playoffs. Like, you know, he's a big guy. He can stretch the floor. Like, I'm confident in what he can do. I watched him in game one. I was like, I'm not going to bring down the hammer just yet. We're going to wait for day two. And then you see him out there, and it's like you can tell it's an adjustment. I like Frank as a player, but this stage right here, you can tell it's a little bit bigger than he expected.
Well, okay, so we know Clifford is going to go four out, one in. So we know that. It's just a matter of do you go small on the wings or small out in your front court. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. Either way, it's going to shake up the rotation. So you're going to see either Hawes or Lamb or possibly Troy Daniels be inserted into this rotation that was – he had solidified an eight-man rotation, and now all of that has to change because Nick Batum will miss the rest of this series.
I don't mind Spencer Hawes getting a crack at it. I'd like to see what he can do.
I thought he played well in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, definitely. You could tell he wanted to be out there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, guys are competitive.
But he's going to get beat. I mean, he's going to get beat by Dragic on the drive. He's going to get beat by Winslow. That's the thing that I think that fans, anyone watching the game, has to understand that when you look at the options that Clifford has in the backside of his rotation, they're all options that have really bad negatives.
They're all liabilities.
Right, exactly. And so you have to just pick one and live with it and then try to scheme the rest of your rotation around those issues.
If somebody could hit some threes, You know that would help.
I'm glad you segued.
That would help.
Because I think a lot of fans are watching this game and watching the past two games, and they see the Hornets in this last one. They shoot 6 of 17 from beyond the arc. In the first one, they shot 6 of 17. And then in the second, they shot 1 of 16. So in last night's game, they shoot 1 of 16 from beyond the arc. Where has the three-point shooting gone? And here's my best answer, okay? Miami is applying a lot of ball pressure, but if Kemba is able, or Lin, or if they're able to beat that ball pressure, they're not helping off the wing. So they're essentially seeding the middle of the floor and the lane to Kemba Walker or Jeremy Lin. Now, you'll see Hassan or Stoudemire be the last line of defense, but Kemba's got, we saw it a couple times, both Kemba and Lin have the ability to use their dribble to make those two guys think and finish at the rim. But you don't help off of Frank, you don't help off of Marvin, and you basically take away any catch and shoot opportunities they have off the pick and roll. And then they're also switching any of the stretch pick and rolls with Frank Kaminsky, with Marvin Williams. So if those guys are involved in the pick and roll, they're immediately switching. And Justin, where do we see Marvin Williams and Frank Kaminsky get so many open three-point opportunities? The pick and pop. So Miami came in and said, look, you want to beat us? You're not going to get the pick and pop. You're not going to get things that you've gotten all regular season. And the question that then would come from that is, why did Miami choose to do this? And I think, Justin, it was to make Charlotte uncomfortable. Because they're okay with giving Kemba looks at the rim. They're okay with giving Al Jefferson one-on-one looks underneath the rim, because they're making Charlotte uncomfortable. They're making them play a different style of basketball than they've played all season. They're making them work a little harder for baskets. And most importantly, they're making this team think. And when you're thinking, you're not in rhythm. Have you ever played, Justin, any of these rhythm music games like Guitar Hero, Rock Bands?
I was never any good. I did try. I wasn't any good. I gave up.
Well, that's fine. like any great musician, I tried it and I gave up. Now, if you think about any of these rhythm games, though, when you're at your best, you're not really thinking about it. You're just strumming along, red, yellow, red, green, 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 red, yellow, but you're not thinking about it. But the moment that you look up and see that you've got like 100-plus note streak going on, the moment that you think about that,
bam,
you're done. You get out of your rhythm. And I think that Miami's plan, and they've executed it brilliantly on the defensive end, was to make Charlotte think. Now here's the thing. If you mention offense to Clifford or anyone else, they'll say 1.07 points per possession. That's great. That's great offense. The Hornets have been able to score points. I agree with that. They've done a great job of getting to the free throw line and manufacturing offense, but it's not the same kind of offense that's made this team successful.
They're working hard for those points. They're working extremely hard. And I don't think people give credit where it's due. Spo's a really good coach.
He's a really good coach.
Like, I don't think people realize that, because this series should really be tight. And it's been one-sided through two games. And it's all because of Spo and on defense. They are really... Charlotte hadn't been comfortable. They haven't seen anything like this.
And I think when you're uncomfortable, it's so much harder for you to gain confidence. And I think that confidence, we've seen it in Marvin, who we can talk about his issues a little later. But if you're uncomfortable, it's harder to be confident, and I think that's leaked into the defense. So again, I'm not saying the offense hasn't played well. I think they've played really well considering the circumstances, considering what Miami has thrown at them defensively. What I think is that Miami's defensive plan has made them uncomfortable, and now we can see that a lack of comfort, lack of confidence leaking into the defensive side of the ball, where they can't seem to find, you know, any kind of rhythm. And it doesn't help that Miami just can't miss. I mean, we haven't even talked about that Miami started this ball game on fire.
Because, you know, some guys can get open looks, you know, and you're okay with it. But the difference is, not only are they open, they're hitting everything.
All right, let's go out to the Hive Talk Live hotline. Standing by is Justin Verrier from ESPN.com. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Justin, how was the commute from Miami to Charlotte for you?
It's been nice. You know, I used to live in LA, and so I'm from Connecticut originally. So I'm used to 6-hour flights. So the 2 hours is a little bit nicer. The no time change as well. So I got in here about noon, and I've been settling in lovely downtown Charlotte. Or is it uptown? You guys tell me.
Well, I say both, but I guess more people like to call it uptown.
It sounds nicer, yeah. It's like okay. It's unique. It makes it's kind of our thing.
You know, sadly, we don't have the beautiful beaches, but we do, if you get the chance, we do have a Live After 5 at the Epicenter. So if you get the chance, you know, I think you should go out there and check it out. Have a good time out there.
Justin just wants to hang out with another Justin. Don't let him fool you.
I mean, Justin's are great names. Justin's are great names. So enough
we
about Miami and Charlotte and the city since. The Hornets are down 0-2. Game one was ugly. Game two, a little bit better. You know, they fought and clawed, but came up short. What would you say plagued the Hornets in game two?
You know, I'm starting to think it's me. I cover the Pelicans year-round, and as you guys probably know, they haven't been too successful. A whole lot of injuries going down there. But, yeah, I mean, but seriously, I think defense has been obviously the big issue. I'm sure you guys heard Steve Clifford's press conference yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He is adamant. Yeah, it was something. It was really interesting to be a part of it. He is pretty adamant that, you know, it's just a defense sort of thing. It seemed like he was kind of hinting at this might sort of be kind of law averages. They were kind of conceding some of the three-pointers. I was going back and watching the tape. And, yes, Steve, I do watch the tape occasionally. And, you know, you could see some of these guys who were getting off for threes, the Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, man. I was watching it today, and I was just like, I was amazed at some of the shots he was hitting considering the season that he's had. The offense, you know, at times it was a little stilted. I think you saw in that third quarter them pressing a little bit. I think they had like 9 assists on 38 makes, and obviously the one made three-pointer for a team that kind of lives off of a three is bad. But, yeah, I think I would agree with him. The defense just like hasn't been there, or maybe just Miami is just, you know, too good on offense is a better way to say it.
Justin, real quick, we just got the news on Twitter from Chris Haynes and Cleveland.com about Nick Batum. The report is he is going to miss the rest of the series versus Heat. How does his absence affect the Hornets here in the short term? He wasn't shooting the ball well in game two, but how does that absence affect the Hornets as they return back to Charlotte?
Yeah, you know, you worry about this a little bit, and I think that was the worry after the game. You saw what Al Jefferson said, what Steve Clifford said. It didn't seem too good. I've been kind of expecting to not have Batum here going forward. I think the problem is any team, you don't want to lose a starter, but a team that I think has kind of thrived off of being this sort of collective that doesn't necessarily have the superstar, maybe Kemba and Nick are kind of the closest things to that, but also just considering what they do, they, you know, the versatility they have on defense to be able to switch enough, the ability to kind of spread it out, play four out around a big, Nick's kind of key to that. You know, he's able to switch on to maybe some of the bigger guys, Marvin as well, kind of keys that sort of on a defensive end. And then just having that kind of other secondary ball handler, pick and roll type of initiator. I think you saw that, I believe, in game two toward the second half. They went more toward Nick running the offense or initiating the offense and with Kemba playing more off the ball. He just gives them, you know, I think he kind of symbolizes what they do in a lot of ways. Maybe not the best three-point shooter in that starting unit, but he just has that versatility that I think they're looking for. And without him, I mean, it just makes a bad situation look even more grim.
Marvin Williams and Jeremy Lin, guys that had really good years, and for some odd reason, it didn't carry over to the playoffs. Marvin Williams can't buy a basket, and Jeremy Lin can guard a stick. They're back in Charlotte. They have two games at home. Do you see anything changing for these guys, and see maybe if the home cooking or something could change for these guys?
With Marvin, I think so. You'd have to imagine if the law of averages are favoring the Heat and they're shooting above their heads, maybe Marvin's shooting a little bit below. I mean, obviously the Heat have been playing good D. But to see what he's been doing here, I mean, especially after the year he had from three, I think he was pushing 40 on three-pointers, 40% on three-pointers if he wasn't just at 40. But, you know, you got to imagine that he's not going to do that the whole time. There were a bunch of misses, I think, that got attributed to him when there was that weird series where I think they missed 8 shots at the basket when they're trying to play volleyball there a little bit. So I would expect him to kind of bounce back here, especially with Nick out. You want to look to him for a little bit more offense. Jeremy, I mean, he got to the rim a good amount. He's getting fouled in one stretch, I believe, in the second quarter there. But, I mean, the defense is going to be an issue with him. It's kind of something he struggled with his whole career. And when you have a guy like Wade going against him, I don't think most people are going to be able to stop him. But I especially don't think Jeremy is well-equipped to kind of keep him out of the paint. So some bouncing back there. But, you know, and at the same time, I think some of these guys, they are what they are. And maybe a guy like Eric Spoelstra, some of the superstars they have on Miami are kind of able to take advantage of it.
We're joined by Justin Verrio, NBA writer for ESPN.com. Before this series, Courtney Lee, in the locker room, you could just see that he embraced the challenge of being able to guard Dwayne Wade. But through two games, I would say it hadn't been in Lee's favor. What has Wade been able to do to counter Courtney's defense?
You know, it's kind of, we've seen some vintage D. Wade going on here. And I think some guys have, in the post-game pressers and in the locker room, have kind of spoke to that. I mean, it's funny. We were just talking about this in the press room last night. I don't think Wade has hit a three since December, which is, you know, kind of unbelievable considering you think about this guy as one of the more dynamic wings in the NBA, maybe in the past decade. Obviously, three hasn't been like his game, but to see that in today's modern NBA where everybody's swinging threes, especially the Hornets, it's been really surprising, but you see a little bit more bounce from him. I think what's helping a lot is when you get a guy like him who's he's taken some games off over the past 2 years as he's kind of aged in the NBA. I think it has really helped. You have three days in between games one and two, and you can sort of see the difference. You see the bounce in him, man. I'm looking at his stats right now, 11 for 22. 22 is a lot of shots there, but shooting 50% from the floor. I mean, he's getting some rebounds. He's distributing the ball. He's kind of, you know, exactly what you would want from a veteran player at this point in the season. You know, I think you don't want to build your team entirely off of older guys. I think you've seen Brooklyn kind of fall to that fate sort of in recent history. But, you know, you get some veterans, you get the right guys in there, and you give them the time between games, and you can see what's happening.
I don't know if we would call this a game or maybe even a challenge, but we're going to ask you to fill in the blanks. If Charlotte does blank, they have a shot at defending home court.
Play defense?
I like that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what it is. I think you would expect the offense to bounce back. And I don't even know if you say bounce back. I mean, they scored 103 points off of 9 assists, which is crazy. I know, like, they played through Al Jefferson a lot in the post, and Kemba Walker is really good at getting to the rim, but, like, 9 assists, I mean, I think I saw a stat today from Basketball Reference saying their 20 assists over the past two games would be the fewest in two games since 1984, I think, in the playoffs, which is crazy, I think. But, you know, Steve Clifford has been harping on it, and, you know, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I think it's just been the defense, and I'm watching the game again, and it just doesn't look like they're doing anything particularly bad. It's either just, you know, it's kind of a horse race and Miami has the guys, or, you know, eventually a lot of these shots that they're conceding, these going under Goran Dragic, allowing Justice Winslow to get those threes off. I think those are kind of going to go their way. But now, I mean, with Nick's injury, it creates a whole nother problem to throw in there. And you have to wonder, even if they do get the regression to the mean that I think Steve Clifford is looking for, if they really have enough to really kind of counterbalance what's going on there.
Last one for you. If Charlotte doesn't blank, Miami will be pulling the brooms out of the closet.
Hit some threes. It's funny, like, not to say that their offense is fine, but I don't know. When you hit 1-3, for me, when I see their offense, they need to have that in order to win. I know Al Jefferson had a lot of success in the paint there against Hassan Whiteside in that second game. But I don't know. It just seems like in order for them to be successful, that is one of the things that you look at for the team going forward. I think it's just really indicative of like certain things that they're doing when they're playing. That would be my answer for that one.
Well, you know, I appreciate you taking the time, Justin. Where can people find you on Twitter if they would like to follow you and read your work?
Sure. It's just my name, Justin Verrier, V-E-R-R-I-E-R.
Well, Justin, it was a pleasure, and it's a nice day outside, man. Make that walk to the Epicenter, enjoy your cold one, and just embrace the city of Charlotte.
Justin, our Justin will be at Tin Roof. He'll be wearing a carnation attached to his shirt. So if you wanna find him,
no chance. I don't even dress like that, my man. No chance. No chance.
Justin, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
Interesting things there from Justin Verrier, and I want to address a couple of them and my thoughts on them. First, I think there were a lot of complaints about what happened with Dragić hitting the threes, and then Justice Winslow, he knocked down a three and knocked down a couple of other what you would consider, you know, perimeter shots from a guy in Winslow that you don't expect to shoot at all. And there's a saying that goes in the NBA, you guard guys to where they can shoot. So I think Winslow's like 26% from three. So you're not going to guard him aggressively at the three-point line. Dragić is an under 35% three-point shooter. So I even tweeted before Dragić hit those three straight three-pointers, I said, if you're Kemba, you go under the Dragić screen, pick and roll, until he hits two. And then he hit two, and I said, okay, stop going under. And then, of course, he hits three. So, you know, it was just one of those games, I think, where Miami and I believe I have the stats. Through the first two games of any playoff series in any round, the Heat have the highest effective field goal percentage, 63.4% ever.
That's nuts.
And if you asked anyone who covered the Heat prior to this series, hey, are the Heat a three-point shooting team? No, absolutely not.
No chance.
You know, even Heat writers and bloggers are calling their play over the past two games unsustainable. Joe Johnson, who plays on the Miami Heat, called it fool's gold. And you saw it a little bit in the second half. The Hornets held the Heat to 40%. I mean, if we're looking for positives, they held them to 43 points in the second half. They held them to 40% shooting, and now the Heat have to go. And I just don't know if you can replicate this kind of shooting unless you have elite shooting talent on the road. I think they fed off an unusually raucous Miami Heat crowd, you know, for the playoffs. I think they felt confident going in, and they just built off that and built off that. But, you know, the Hornets, I thought, had more fight, more aggressiveness early on, and the Heat just overwhelmed them with the shooting. Also, Justin brought up the 9 assists and 38 makes, and I had a couple of people on Twitter commenting about how the Hornets aren't moving the ball, and that means they don't have a good offense. To me, you have to watch the game. Like, you can read a box score and say, okay, 9 assists, 38 makes, ooh, that's no good. But you have to understand what I said about the Heat taking away the three-point shot. That means Kemba has a wide-open lane. You want him to take that open opportunity and not pass the ball and score the basket. You want Al Jefferson, when he gets one-on-one opportunities versus Hassan Whiteside, who can't guard him, versus Stoudemire, who can guard him a little better but really can't guard Al Jefferson when he's in the zone. Those are high quality, efficient looks. That's good offense. It might not be the offense that fans are used to seeing from the Charlotte Hornets, but that doesn't make it bad offense, Justin.
Not at all. And, like, there are the positives of Kemba and Lin getting in the lane. You know, Al Jefferson is going to work. To be honest, Charlotte just needs some shots to fall. They need a little space.
Because there were open looks, and
need some shots to fall, because Miami's like, hey, you guys, like, you guys aren't making any shots. Like, you know, so, you know, we're going to do what we're going to do and just pounce on guys. And there are some positives. And I tell you, man, Al looked really good. He looked really good on the block. I said, man, it's odd to think Kemba had 29, Al had 25, and they lost. If I would have told you, hey, DB, I have a prediction.
Hey, buddy.
Big Al's going to go for 25. Kemba's going to go for 29. Do you think the Hornets win? 9 times out of 10, I think you're going to say, yeah, I'll take the chance that Charlotte wins. And they lost. They're just going to need some guys to step up. Miami's been, these dudes can't miss if they wanted to. And it's just been a little odd. But game 3... you're right. They can't. Miami can't continue to just be this hot. Marvin is not gonna go one for like what 17, I think, over two games. Like things are gonna get a little better.
Miami did what they needed to do, which is feed off their home crowd and win their home court. The Hornets, who have played extremely well at home all season, have to now shake off whatever happened in Miami and go and do the same thing. They're capable of it. The Batum loss hurts. I think in the short term they can survive it. I don't think in the long term in this series that they can survive the Batum loss. And I say that because, look, he shot, what, 3 of 11 before getting hurt. He was struggling in this series. But we've seen Batum so many times struggle for three quarters and then in the fourth quarter turn it on. And we've also seen him be able to hit tough shots in big game moments. And you need that kind of guy. And they have one in Kemba Walker and occasionally one in Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin's been able to turn on that big game moment type of game. But, you know, he went 2 of 7 last night. He's also kind of a little bit streaky in that regard. So I think when you lose Batum, you lose that second surefire thing when it comes to big game moments, hitting shots, ISO opportunities, because that's what D. Wade has meant. You look past the 28 points and 8 assists, but you look at those opportunities that D. Wade got late in that game, ISO, got all alone on the elbow against Courtney Lee. And God love Courtney Lee. I mean, he did everything he could, but look, when D. Wade hits that turnaround, and again, the knees are fresh. This isn't like years past when he looked a little worn down or he had injuries. This guy's fresh. He was off 2 days rest, and Wade is an all-star. Wade is a superstar.
He's a top 5 shooting guard all time.
So, I mean,
you know, I don't think Courtney Lee thought he was going to be this good, to be honest. I don't, because what do they say? The old cliche, the only way to beat great defense with better offense. Courtney Lee is doing everything out there. Like, he's trying. It's not like he's out there pulling the James Harden, though I do love James Harden. He's really trying, and Wade is just taking his lunch.
And Courtney Lee also, I thought, offensively took advantage of what the Heat are throwing at them defensively. There is wide open space for that mid-range jumper, and you know, I thought Lee did a great job of just, again, just trying to survive in certain moments of that game. Lee stepped up and knocked down a few jump shots. But I think what's most surprising to me about this entire series, Justin, is that you have Nick Batum, Marvin Williams, Courtney Lee, and Jeremy Lin all playing for contracts. And they've certainly played well all regular season. But I think you've seen time after time in the NBA, guys have great playoff series or multiple series and turn that into big bucks. And, you know, I think that there are going to be some questions for all four of these guys moving forward if the series continues like it is. I think there will be some serious questions going into free agency. Is Batum fragile? Can Marvin step up in the big moments? Can Courtney Lee guard guys one-on-one? And it goes on down the line. And so... I think it's surprising that they haven't to this point been able to step up with one big performance.
It hasn't been beneficial for those guys, but would you say it's kind of helped Charlotte if they've been thinking about, you know, keeping Marvin, Batum, Lin? Because Lin had a great year.
I mean, you don't know that the market is going to be so strange. You just can't know for sure how this is going to affect each of their individual stocks. But, you know, that's tough to say. It's tough as a fan to look at it and go, well, I'm glad they're playing terrible.
Yeah,
because
we'll get a cheaper discount.
Yeah, you don't want to think like that, but it certainly is, I think, something to talk about as it moves forward. And you just hope, again, that these guys get back into Charlotte, they get back into a building they're comfortable with, and things start to happen.
And if there's any game they do it, it's usually game 3.
And Justin Verrier brought up that these two Justins, it's knocking me off
it's
my
clutch.
Game. Justin brought up that possession that Marvin and Cody, they could knock it in. They were just
right there. What was that? Top of the third, right?
Yeah, right at the top of the third. Volleyball possession. By the way, coming up, I'll tell you when the Hornets lost the game. It wasn't in the second quarter. It wasn't that 43-point second quarter that Miami put up.
Was it when Kemba was out there?
I'll tell you.
Abused?
I'm going to tell you, but we've got to get to Audie here in a moment.
We got big time on the line.
Yeah, we got big time Audie Joseph
big
on
time.
The line. I like that nickname for him. But I think that I'll have that coming up. But some positives to take away from this game for sure. They were able to get Hassan Whiteside in early foul trouble. They'll have to do that again in game three. The injury to Batum, it's terrible. I think, again, in the long term of this series, it's going to hurt them. But I think in the short term, it does force an adjustment. It does force someone to step up. And I think that could be almost it could almost unclog the pipe a little bit for
somebody.
This rotate.
Next man up.
Yes, somebody has to do something, and we see this time and time again in the NBA playoffs. But let's pop back out to the Hive Talk Live hotline, standing by, again, a favorite of the show. He's got a new nickname now, courtesy of Justin Thomas. Big Time, Adi Joseph, deputy editor for SportingNews.com. Adi, what do you think of your new nickname?
Justin's giving me that one for a while. Every time.
Oh, what?
I see.
Bunch of insidery locker room types. I guess I wasn't invited to the Applebee's meeting of locker room Charlotte Hornets locker room guys. You know, I like Applebee's too. You can't invite me. It's okay.
Oh, that was funny.
We do Don Bosco. What's it called? Del Frisco's.
Yeah.
We're fancy. He tried to lowball us with Applebee's.
Official steakhouse of the Hornets.
Right? Season ticket holders, they always give the Del Frisco's coupons away. All right, Adi, I want to ask you about this. We talked a little bit about the Steve Clifford comments post-game, game two, with Justin Verrier earlier, but I want to get your thoughts as well as somebody who's been around head coach Steve Clifford all season. First, I want to play the comments themselves. Here we go. So Steve Clifford, after the game, he was asked about adjustments. He seemed a smidge frustrated with the line of questioning, and it has a lot of people talking, a lot of headlines that read, Steve Clifford politely tells writers they have no idea what they are talking about. We have the question in question asked by ESPN's Tom Haberstroh, and a portion of Steve Clifford's response. It's really good. It's a little long, but hang with us. Here we go.
Coach, it sounds like to me you're dealing with process versus results, is that you're trying to stick to the game plan and it's not getting the results you want. How, as a coach, when you only have two games, you could potentially be out in two games, when your back's up against the wall like this, how do you not say, okay, maybe we need to switch things up when they're scoring 115 points?
Well, you have to look at how they're scoring. I mean, it's not, you know, like game one. The majority of the problems in game one were basic principles versus coverages. Like tonight was the same thing. It's one-on-one penetration, not allowing the ball middle. It's not like, they, you know, like for instance, they're not running sets that we're having trouble with coverages on. Not to be disrespectful, but you guys, you watch these games, you just come up like something's got to change. Or sometimes you just have to do the basic things better, which is what basketball is. I mean, it kills me this. Jeff Van Gundy always used to say, writers love to say they made an adjustment. Usually the adjustment is some guy that went 1 for 8 went 6 for 8. And I'm not joking, but you sit here. If you're not watching the film, no disrespect, you have no idea what should happen. This knee-jerk thing about something's going to change, you know, everybody's asking me for 2 days, what about starting now so your offense is better? Our offense was 1.07 points per possession. You guys are looking at 91 points. You're wrong. Sorry. So what I'm going to do is, I know my team. I watch my team closer than anybody. I'm going to look and figure out what the problems are. Okay, if we need to make an adjustment, we'll make it. It's not all these great ideas or things that have to change, or that this plan is terribly wrong. Sometimes the other team just makes shots, okay?
All right. All right, Adi Joseph from Sporting News joining us here. Adi, those were strong comments by Steve Clifford. He did say this afternoon that he wasn't trying to be disrespectful, but what do you think about those comments?
They're very like Steve in that, you know, I don't know that there's a better coach in the league that he wants you to see where he's coming from. And, you know, I could see how when Tom, who's a very smart man, when the way he phrased it, Steve might have thought Tom was sort of saying, what are you doing? I don't think that was what Tom's intention was. And, you know, after a rough loss like that, coaches tend to be a little more on edge. With that said, you know, but what I think Steve was saying was, look, we have gotten blown out twice.
yet you look at what they're doing. This is a team that normally is not that great at shooting three-pointers, and they're shooting like 60% from three or 50% from three. They're shooting 58% from the field. Those are not normal things. And Steve is trying to say, look, we're making them take a lot of the shots we want. We're not consistently giving up wide-open layups to Dwayne Wade. It's they're beating us with shots that we thought they wouldn't beat us with, you know, by through our own scouting reports. Now, you know, there's always the possibility that the scouting reports were flawed or that they were giving up shots that the Heat simply normally don't get and the Heat can make and they just didn't realize it. But, you know, I think in general, what Steve was trying to do was explain his process, which is what he does a lot in interviews. And he might have been a little testy considering his team had just fallen behind 2-0 in the first round.
I think the mistake that Tom Haverstraud, I love reading his stuff. I've never met him in person, but just from reading his stuff, yeah, I agree. He's a smart guy. But I think the mistake he made was not to preface it with, Steve, I know you haven't watched the tape yet, because that's local guys seem to know. Like, if you say that, you get a little bit of a buffer with Steve that, you know, I know you haven't watched the tape yet, but here's my question.
I'll be honest, I ask a lot of questions where I'm probing, and I have gotten some slight guff from him, and he always does drop the I haven't watched the tape yet line. But, you know, he genuinely, I think he wants us to understand, and he knows who, he may not know Tom specifically, but he knows what a smart question is and what a bad question is, and he gives different kinds of answers. The other day, he dropped a line when in the last regular season playoff game, he dropped a line when I asked him who on his team could play isolation basketball the way the playoffs tend to focus around. You know, he dropped a line about synergy sports. And this is a guy who is very, very smart and adept at analyzing the game in a wide variety of ways, and he's just trying to let us in a little bit with his interviews. It's, again, after another bad loss in the playoffs, it's not exactly going to be his favorite time to get questions about, you know, a tape he hasn't watched, which is, I think, where he was coming from with a little bit of maybe more edge than he normally shows.
I think that Coach Clifford is such an incredibly smart guy when it comes to the game of basketball, but also complex because, you know, he comes from the Van Gundy tree, and Jeff Van Gundy, famously not a big fan of stats, but it seems like Clifford balances the anecdotal knowledge of the game of basketball, the eye test kind of stuff, with the ability to embrace, you know, points per possession and different things to tell you the behind the scenes story of what you're watching on television. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say this. I think a lot of the things. Look, Jeff Van Gundy may not be a fan. I'm positive he does not like all-encompassing stats. I don't believe any coach likes all-encompassing stats. I don't think any coach wants to know what their players' win shares or PER are, because they don't see any value in that. But I can assure you that, you know, a lot of coaches, not all, but a lot of the coaches who are portrayed as being anti-stats because they don't like those sort of evaluative measures, almost all of them will look at the scouting style stats, such as pace, such as, you know, percentages shot from different zones on the court, those types of things. You know, we try to paint coaches as being either pro stats or anti stats. Almost no coaches have strong statistical backgrounds. Almost no coaches will understand the math on the level that Tom Haverstraud does, but that's not their job. Their job is to learn which ones they can actually apply to teaching their players. And you don't want to boggle your players' minds in-game situations with, oh, Luol Deng shoots 48% from there, but he's down to 43% if I make him take two steps to the right. No, you just want to say force him right. And those are the kind of stats that coaches, including Steve Clifford, are looking for, and including Jeff Van Gundy. When he rallies on air, it's more about trying to evaluate players' entire games through single numbers.
Here with Adi Joseph, deputy editor at Sporting News. Adi, I want to go back to Haverstraud's question, because I think the question itself was a fair question that, you know, I think that Steve Clifford, and in fact he said that the day previous, that the offense is generally the same, but defensively you have to do things in the playoffs
that you have to you change things up a little bit according to what opponent you're playing. And it's clear to me that they're more aggressive on some of these side pick and rolls. And his question was a little bit about results versus process. You know, is that a fair question to say, look, you know, you tried something a little different on defense. Is this a results issue because of that change? Or is this just one of these things where Miami is hot shooting? Is that a fair question to ask?
I think it's absolutely a fair question. I mean, even Steve, you know, in shooting down the question, he brought up how well the offense was playing. The question wasn't about the offense. But, you know, it was, and if anyone knows what the pace adjusted stats are, it's Tom. So, you know, the better, the fundamental truth is Steve told us over and over again, he was very worried about the combination of Dwayne Wade and Joe Johnson and how absurdly good both of them can be in isolation situations. He planned a lot of his defense for that. And he has instead been burned inside by Hassan Whiteside. And he, in game one in particular, was burned by Luol Deng. And, you know, even Wade has been scoring off non-isolation plays. So I my guess is that Steve Clifford on Saturday night is going to be playing a slightly modified defense of some sort. He just didn't know what those modifications were yet, and I can understand that. And you know, it's a tough position to interview anyone immediately following a very, very important loss, and that needs to be factored in all these conversations.
Looking ahead to Game 3 in Charlotte, Adi, what, if anything, do you think will be working in the Charlotte Hornets' favor at home?
I think the home court advantage is a pretty big one. And, you know, it's the obvious change between games two and game three is that the court changes and the city changes. But they won 30-11 at home. They were they're the sixth best home team in the league. They were better than the Clippers. They were better than the Heat. They were better than the Hawks, and a bunch of other good teams. When it comes down to it, this team plays like a different team in Charlotte. And in particular, I think you're going to see just a lot of kind of pissed off players looking for some revenge. Now, I'm not saying that they'll necessarily have the solutions, because when a team is shooting the way that the Heat are, you're just not going to beat them. But a lot changes with home court advantage, and I don't think you should undersell that, you know, particularly for a team with as massive splits as the Hornets had.
I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, Adi, the pissed off player aspect, because this is a team that's generally viewed as even keel, but they do have a couple of emotional guys, one of those guys being Marvin Williams. But Marvin struggled so mightily with his shot and his confidence in Miami. How much of a factor do you think that was, that their emotional center was sort of knocked off his center of gravity?
Marvin's emotional side is a very unique one. I mean, in as a person, he's exceedingly even keeled. The guy is the most relaxed, easy to talk to person in the whole locker room, and one of the most relaxed, easy to talk to people in the NBA. But
on the court
he's a very different person. So I don't know that, you know, his leadership necessarily changed as his play did, but I think Marvin is a very he puts a lot on himself, even though, you know, on paper he might only be the fifth biggest name on this team. I think he knows that he is an incredibly important player to what everything that happens here, and he wants that responsibility. So I know he's going to be very hard on himself. He's also very smart, and I don't think he's going to try to bite off more than he can chew. But I would look more toward, if anyone can play with an edge and anyone can rise to the occasion on this team, the guy that does that is Kemba Walker. And we have seen what Kemba does at home. He's a much better player at home. And we have seen what he does when he has sort of a chip on his shoulder, when there is a little adversity, and he can be quite dazzling when he puts his mind to it and feels the pressure. And I'm sure he does right now. I'm sure he's spent the last couple days thinking a lot about game three.
We got the news before the show on Nick Batum expected to miss the remainder of the series versus Heat. Adi, how does his absence affect the Hornets in the short term?
Well, it makes for a very interesting matchup. I assume Jeremy Lin will slide into the starting lineup. And they've played pretty well when Jeremy's been in the starting lineup, whether it's for Batum or for Kemba. The play hasn't dropped off, I'll say that. As a result, they're going to be a little bit smaller, but that might help. They won't have the ideal matchup for Joe Johnson, but the way the other guys have been playing on the Heat, maybe the best thing for the Hornets is to make Joe Johnson beat them. And that's something that Clifford did not want to do coming into this series. But again, assuming that we're making some adjustments, particularly with Nick out, if they can force ISO Joe into the way that they're into the Heat's game plan, that could potentially, bog down what's been a really successful Heat offense and play into the Hornets' favor. So losing Nick is a huge blow. Let's not underscore that, but they've played well in the few games that he's missed. And right now, after the first two games, change is probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff there. Big time. Adi Joseph joining us on the Hive Talk Live hotline. Thank you. So, but this, listen, we're going to do, whenever this thing ends, we're going to do a recap show, and we definitely want you to be a part of that.
All right.
All right. Until then, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, bye.
Okay. I loved what Adi had to say there, and I love the aspect that, Steve Clifford makes the adjustment, blitzes a side pick and rolls, gets aggressive, even on the above break pick and rolls in the first game, backed off that a little bit in the second game, but that was all to limit what Dwayne Wade and ISO Joe Johnson gives the Miami Heat. And it backfired. But here's the thing, Justin. In the NBA, guys are too quick, too strong. It's impossible to guard all five guys, one-on-one, okay? So in the NBA, you have to pick your poison. You have to pick, okay, what do I want to take away? What's most likely to beat me? I'm going to take that away. It's going to leave this open, just like the Miami Heat. They're taking away the three-point shot. It's leaving Kemba Walker and Al Jefferson opportunities at the lane. And, they went with a strategy. And they made the Heat shoot three-pointers and move the ball, two things that they haven't done particularly well all season, and the Heat just stepped up and did it. And no one wants to hear that. That's nihilistic a little bit. That's like, what really matters? If you can't take the best thing away and still beat a team, then what the hell are we doing here? But sometimes, and I think this is what Clifford was alluding to at the end of that statement that we played, you do what you can. You hope they miss. They didn't. That's basketball.
And we know they're not going to shoot that well. And one thing what played well for Miami was Josh Richardson and Winslow. This is their first time on the road. Time Warner Cable Arena is going to be rocking. I feel like those guys are going to take a step back. They're not going to shoot that great, so that'd be the second bullet point. And the third one, Kimba's going to get a few fouls. He really took a beating and was really frustrated about not getting the calls. And I'll give you the last point. Shots are going to fall. So I feel like I didn't see any positivity, to be honest, with Batum being out. I didn't. But if there's one game that they can rally and put everything they have into something.
And the crowd, listen, the crowd at Time Warner Cable Arena is going to be rocking. The promotions from the Hornets side are good. The fans will come out for playoff games. It's going to be and the atmosphere in the arena was getting better and better with each of those final couple of games.
I ran into a guy today and I was like, well, I don't know if I'd be able to do this. I have the game on Saturday. He was like, oh, I'll be there too. I was like, oh, well, I know you. You probably have pretty good seats. Said, man, don't even matter. I'm just glad to be in the building. People don't care.
Yeah, people want to see playoff teams.
They want to be there.
Exactly. And so, again, the Hornets get this thing tied up 2-2, then anything goes. You just don't know. You have to wait and see what's going to happen with this Batum injury. Does it encourage me that they could win a seven-game series now? I don't know. But
it's tougher.
But it definitely makes it a lot tougher.
Just think, everybody has said, well, not everybody. The Hornets have, they've just kind of said, you know, if somebody went down, it was always next man up, next man up. Same as the Panthers, next man up, next man up. You have Spencer Haas. It'd be a great time for him to, you know, do something. Jeremy Lamb, Troy Daniels. One of the two has to be able to make shots. If you can just get two of the unlikely heroes to step up, you'll be able to, you will be able to put the brooms away at least for one game and get you a dub and feel good about it. They haven't won a playoff game in 14 years.
Yeah, I think that would inspire a lot of confidence in the city of Charlotte, the fans of the Hornets and the Hornets themselves, if they can get that off their back and win that first game in what, 13 games.
Lynn has been really good in Charlotte in big games.
And when Lynn starts,
you know,
when he starts, he steps up in a big way.
Cleveland and the Spurs. So, you know, he'll have, his number will be called.
Well, I promised that I would reveal when I thought exactly the Hornets lost game two, and I'll tie this into game three as well. I didn't think it was in the second quarter when the Heat scored 43 points on 84% shooting. After going back and rewatching, I actually think they dropped this game in the middle of the third quarter, 7 minutes to go. They sub Al Jefferson back into the game. Jefferson had dominated the first half, 8 of 11, 16 points. The Hornets had the lead down to 8. But in the third quarter, he doesn't get a look to shoot the ball until 4 minutes left to go. And by that time, the Heat had the lead back up to 15.
Got to rock the hot hand.
I think that's the tie-in. Batum took three straight odd elbow jumpers, and Kemba had a few go begging. I think that if the Hornets get whatever adjustment is made because of the Batum injury, you have to, in the third quarter, recognize what is being successful for you and take advantage of that. If the Heat decide to back their defense, because the Heat could change their defense and start to back off and try to take away Jefferson, you have to have that awareness offensively and defensively and figure out, okay, are they changing up their game? If they are, now what do we do? That's going to be the most interesting thing to watch in game three. And we have a couple minutes left. I do want to get to this one last thing. It's an NBA All-Star game or All-Star weekend update. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver was on Mike and Mike this morning, and the 2017 NBA All-Star game, slated to take place in Charlotte for now, was up for discussion. Adam Silver said the NBA has been clear that if the status quo, that being the controversial House Bill 2 in North Carolina, remains in place, the All-Star game would have to be moved, but reiterated that he wants to work to get the controversial House Bill 2 changed and hopefully keep the weekend in Charlotte. So I think there's been some confusion because of the press conference that Silver gave. There's been some confusion about, you know, would Silver take away the game? Was that on the table? Was there an ultimatum? Was there a date? And Silver hasn't done a great job of being clear, but I think this cleared it up for sure that, look, if the law doesn't change to the NBA satisfaction, they will take away the game. But the NBA, Adam Silver, wants to continue to work through this situation and see if they can affect change. Because once they pull the game, or even really once they have that ultimatum and say, if you don't change this law in 2 weeks, we're taking the game away. Once they do that, all their leverage goes away. But the threat of the game moving is more powerful at this time than taking the game away or taking the weekend away from Charlotte. So we'll keep monitoring the situation. I hope that everything gets resolved to the satisfaction of the NBA, to the satisfaction of the Charlotte Hornets and fans.
Forward to this for years. I would be devastated. I'm just hoping and praying that.
But the NBA, the NBA has to stand by their principles.
I agree.
You have, because I think they've done such a great job of taking firm stands that match the majority of people that enjoy their product, unlike the NFL.
The NFL don't care.
I think the NBA has staked a claim in this whole NBA cares. And, you know, I for the health of the league and for the health of the game of basketball, I think it's important that they keep doing that.
Somebody will call them out. And you don't want that to happen. And plus, it's Michael Jordan. You know they don't want to take it from Mike. They just want a little cooperation.
I'm sure he's playing a factor in this. He's not going to be vocal. He's not going to be vocal about it. That's never been his style.
Oh,
but
don't worry.
Certainly,
he's back there.
Certainly, he's playing some kind of factor in it. All right, that'll do it for us, Hornets fans. Thanks so much to our guests, Justin Verrier and Adi Joseph. I would play some Prince music in honor of his passing. Very sad to hear that news, but he was adamant about his intellectual property rights, so I think it would be best to honor him if I just told you, go to iTunes and buy a song that you've never heard before from Prince. Just buy 99 cent, $1.29, whatever it costs. Go buy a Prince song that you've never heard before, and that would be the best way to honor him. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Hive Talk Live for live game updates and more. Go to atthehive.com for all the latest news and analysis on your Charlotte Hornets. Make sure to listen to ESPN 730 AM anytime, anywhere at ESPN730.com or on the ESPN Radio app. For Justin, I'm Doug, and producer Katie saying stay bought in, stay believing. It's time to defend the Hive. All hail the teal and purple.